Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, Friday afternoon, October 17th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. Apple secures exclusive F1 streaming rights, bringing every race to Apple TV starting next year. We'll cover that in our next segment. But first, the government shutdown continues with no end in sight and with no clarity or new economic data. Wall Street has largely brushed off concerns, though early signs of economic impact are beginning to emerge. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Diane Swonk, Chief Economist, KPMG in Chicago. Diane, thank you for joining us today. And that really does seem to be the consensus among all of the analysts that we've been talking to on the Noon Business Hour for the last 2 weeks, is that eventually the government shutdown will end and life will go on. But what are the ways in which it can become more disruptive, especially if this becomes a protracted government shutdown?
Well, we are losing about 0.2% of growth per week during the shutdown. And usually what we see is we recoup many of those losses after the shutdown is over. What we're seeing, though, is concerns about whether or not people will be paid in arrears, as they usually are after a government shutdown. They didn't choose not to work during this period of time. We have about 750,000 people who are not getting paychecks right now, and it really has spillover effects to contractors and to the communities, most of which are located outside of the Beltway in D.C., and so we're starting to see some of those effects. You will probably see, not too long from now, more lines at the airport, and we've already seen the shortages of air traffic controllers. That was one of the things that was a tipping point during the 35-day shutdown that we saw in 2018 and 2019, as the long line that in response to that. And I think that's the way to be thinking about this, is this is a little unique in terms of the timing and it going, it's a much larger shutdown than we had in 2018 and 2019. And in fact, it did really take a toll on consumer spending when it occurred, and it took us over 3 months to recoup what we had lost during that shutdown.
And of course, we're flying blind, more or less, as far as government data is concerned on the economy. And there can be some backfill with private analysis or the research desks at various banks. And of course, the markets will react to earnings season. But what does that mean for people in your line of work if the numbers simply aren't there?
It really is something very important, especially for the Federal Reserve, which is, as we know, data dependent. What is the problem is that not only are we not getting data, we will get the CPI report because that is critical to determining things like the cost of adjustment to Social Security. So the September CPI report, the data has been gathered. They've called back workers to release that next Friday. But we are going to lose some data entirely, and that will leave gaps in our data at a particularly important time when the economy, the labor market, is slowing. We know that's been going on. We need to know if this low-hire, low-fire sort of regime we're in continues, or is there a tipping point on the flip side of it? Is the inflation coming back stronger? Is it going to be more persistent? These are all issues that we may see gaps in the data, and the private sector data is great for coloring in some of the lines that we see from the overall economic data, the official economic data, but nothing is as transparent as the government's data, nor as overarching in terms of understanding the economy. And so it only gives us bits and pieces. We have more on the labor market than we do on price. We're relying on now more is surveys where consumers are saying they're concerned about prices related to tariffs, and they're seeing prices pick up as well.
Diane Swonk, Chief Economist, KPMG in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Coming up, Apple TV takes a turn into Formula One racing.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday for planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Formula One racing has surged in popularity in the U.S. over the past decade, and Apple is getting in on the action. Joining us to explain is Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the Vertere Group in Chicago. Tim, thank you for joining us today. Apple TV has been around for 6 years now. It was originally called Apple TV Plus, and it recently rebranded. It dropped the plus, but so far its programming has turned out to be a minus, with the exception of Ted Lasso. That's the Apple TV's one breakout hit. The other shows, even though they're very good looking, and of course I'm a huge fan of For All Mankind, the other shows though have not managed to break out, and that goes the same for their sports play-by-play.
I think one of the ways to kind of frame where Apple TV is right now is almost like HBO back in the late 70s, early 1980s, sort of as the premium imprimatur, if you will, of high-quality programming. And I think to that extent, Apple TV has succeeded in, I guess, carving out its niche for itself. Now, that said, that tends to be more of a higher order proposition that feels a little more exclusive. There are benefits to that kind of positioning, but certainly that's not a scaled proposition. And I think that's why perhaps by comparison to the other streaming platforms that we've talked about over the years, Apple TV now is, I wouldn't call it an also-ran, but it certainly stands out by itself as a smaller, more curated, and perhaps more exclusive kind of environment in the streaming realm. And I think, look, I think F1, Formula One racing is probably very aligned with that kind of positioning. I think perhaps that had something to do with this new deal.
Yeah, I was going to ask, I mean, does F1 line up with your thesis that Apple TV now wants to be the Robb Report? For those of you who are familiar with the magazine for the ultra wealthy, it's the Robb Report of streaming services. And they're more than happy just to spend the money on the prestige programming, the prestige play-by-play, soccer, and just stuff that a small, devoted following of affluent people will enjoy.
Yeah, and there's a business in that, right? Appealing to that kind of crowd, right? It's not too different than the parsing of layers out there in all kinds of businesses, like the airline business and whatnot, right? There's a higher margin to be had with the premium subscriber, the premium customer, and Formula One fits that very, very nicely. And there's no real worry about that. Now, the thing to keep in mind in this, right, ESPN was carrying Formula One. The ratings were not all that great. I mean, in the aggregate, I mean, you would be lucky to get a million viewers to watch one of these races. Some of that has to do with the time zone change effect and that kind of stuff. I think, frankly, the other factor is that ESPN's broadcasts were literally simulcasts of what Sky TV production out of the UK were doing, right? So there was no original ESPN kind of dynamic to that programming. I think Apple, as they pick and choose their sports plays, very much wants to be in an environment where they can at least, if not control, certainly influence and or enhance the production capabilities and bring a little bit of that Apple sort of sheen to their programming. And I think that's exactly what both Formula One and Apple TV are trying to do in the months ahead, is to figure out how to make that experience a little bit more unique, different, special, perhaps maybe where an ESPN simulcast did not.
Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the Verter Group in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, we'll talk about why women are leaving the workforce at higher rates. That's on the way.
Discussing the news affecting your money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Women are leaving the workforce at what some analysts are calling alarming rates. Here to shed some light on the trend is Michelle Reisdorf, Chicago jobs expert with the Robert Half Company in Chicago. Michelle, thank you for joining us today. And is this a second-order effect from the overall just increase in prices in the costs of goods and services over the years and the inability of wages to keep up?
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely one of the determining factor. You know, as you mentioned, childcare costs continue to go up. There's been shortages, you know, just even finding good childcare. And, you know, for women in the workforce, that can sometimes be a tough choice to have to make and balance, you know, in relation to their job.
An estimated 455,000 women left the workforce between January and August of this year. And if you place that graph over the graph of offices that are going back to 5 days a week in person, could you see a correlation?
Absolutely. That would be the other reason that I would comment on, is that many companies have gone from fully remote to hybrid, and then even a small chunk of that going from hybrid back to in-office 5 days a week, which does majorly affect the flexibility of work-life balance. You know, and as you find, not all, but many women are the caregivers of, you know, home, ailing parents, you know, the craziness of school schedules, et cetera. Losing that flexibility does also sometimes, you know, occur in tough choices about their jobs.
And let's talk about the craziness of school schedules, because I think this is something to which everyone can relate. We all remember our own experiences as kids going to various after-school and extracurricular activities, but is there any research, especially on the HR and work-life balance side of the equation, that after-school activities for your kids are actually more numerous and more intense than they were before? Because the whole idea that 5 o'clock is quitting time, let's all go to the bar, that seems very foreign to me. I mean, I'm usually racing out the door to get to the earliest train possible so I can meet someone at soccer practice or dance pickup or basketball or volleyball. And that runs until 9 o'clock most nights. And is that the experience for everybody?
Oh, absolutely. I see it in the office every day. You know, I think with the pandemic, the flexibility to book those school activities became more during the day than, you know, unless at after school or even in some cases early before school. And, you know, a lot of schools got used to that and didn't really make changes to those schedules. And then you find, you know, employers bringing employees back into the office that suddenly have to scramble to figure out how to get their child to a practice in the middle of the day or that starts at 3 p.m. And it makes it tougher and tougher. And, you know, I can say, as you know, to be an employer of choice, you really have to look at the flexibility of your employees' schedules and your ability to accommodate some of that. You know, maybe it's school drop off in the morning and you trade with another parent for pickups or, you know, practices in the evening. But as an employer, if I don't offer that flexibility, then sometimes, you know, my employees will make tough choices and it's not always me. They'll put their kids first. So
Michelle Reisdorf, Chicago jobs expert with the Robert Half Company in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Still ahead in Entrepreneur Friday, the restaurant industry continues to adjust to a post-pandemic world.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcast.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. Markets are higher today. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist with B. Riley Wealth in New York. Art, thank you for joining us today. Earnings season rolls on as the banks report their third quarter earnings, and it seems like the markets are having a hard time determining whether or not they should worry.
Yeah, I think there's plenty of things to worry about, Rob, for sure. It's certainly not the banks' earnings, and especially the big banks. The first 2 days that covered the money center banks were all home runs, and loan loss reserves really didn't tick up. But as we edged into Wednesday, hearing from some of the regionals and some of their exposures to some questionable credits started us getting concerned at the smaller level. So to the extent that I would say that the first week of earnings reporting season certainly better than had been anticipated, but renewed worries about some bad credits out there. And as Jamie Dimon said, when there's one cockroach, there's likely going to be others. So I think investors are taking a step back, and as it applies to some of the regional banks and what exposure they might have. That's just one of the handful of things we're worried about. The government's still shut down, and they went home today, so we won't know anything until Monday. Yeah, and we certainly have ongoing tension in trade with China, and we don't know where that ends up. So, you know, coming into the month at or near all-time highs, it's easy to find things to worry about, and the market certainly seems to be doing that every other day this week.
Now, the concern about some banks holding bad paper, how does that stack up to the concern that we saw a couple of years ago that some banks just simply weren't ready for the higher interest rate environment? And also, how does it stack up to the degree of anxiety that existed when some big banks went kaput, such as Silicon Valley Bank several years ago?
Yeah, Silicon Valley Bank and the rest of that was much more of a balance sheet imbalance, right? So looking at the duration of your exposure on your balance sheet and not preparing that duration for rising interest rates is what caught all of those banks by surprise, I guess you would say. But also the ability for people to get concerned about Silicon Valley Bank and immediately remove some $30 billion in a two-day period certainly caused that bank to go under the waves and be taken up by one of the larger banks. So I don't think we're there. I think where we are is, where are we in the credit cycle? You know, and with the credit cycle being as long as it has been, how far did some of these banks reach with the credits that they were putting out? And, you know, when we start to see some bankruptcies, which we've seen two over the last couple of weeks, you have to start getting concerned that perhaps there's some bad credits out there. And that's going to largely impact the regional banks a whole lot more than it's going to impact the money center banks.
And then looking at the valuation of the stock market as a whole, are we in a situation where, and we talk about how NVIDIA needs to be priced for perfection, does the market writ large need to be priced for perfection in this third quarter earnings season, especially in an environment where you're not getting official government data?
Yeah, that's such a great question. I look at it this way. When you come into your reporting season at or near all-time highs, right? It's difficult for the reaction function to be positive, even if you do a great job. I think that's just a function of, you know, for example, JP Morgan had a great quarter, but was up 29% year to date coming into the quarter. So the reaction was kind of a yawn. And I think that's going to be true for those sectors that are outperforming. That certainly will be true of tech and communication services and financials and utilities. But there's another six sectors that are coming in that are not outperforming the index that will likely have an upside reaction to any positive news on the earnings front. So it's all a function of how you're priced coming into it. And I think on a sector-by-sector basis, the financials certainly are doing well this year, as is tech and communication services and utilities. The rest of the S&P 500 likely will get that actual, you know, good news is good news reaction because they're not outperforming the market.
Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist, B. Riley Wealth in New York. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Entrepreneur Friday, restaurants have made a comeback, but they still face plenty of headwinds. We'll go in depth.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Many restaurants have rebounded since the pandemic, but many still face rising food and labor costs, staffing shortages, delivery app fees, and safety concerns amid value-conscious customers. Welcome in Brian Tondrick, who is the founder and owner of Bartoli's Pizzeria, locations in Chicago's Roscoe Village and Westtown neighborhoods. Brian, thank you for joining us today on Entrepreneur Friday. And reflect for us on your experience coming out of the pandemic. We're 5 years removed from the COVID shutdowns, which really, that was a big headwind for you because you're opening a new location when everything shut down in 2020. And, you know, how is the space recovered? And is there some more distance to cover?
Hey, Rob, how are you? Yeah, definitely. When we first opened, it was the week before the pandemic started and the city had shut down. And it was obviously, you can imagine the challenges we had when we first opened the restaurant. Things have rebounded definitely since then. I mean, it took a few years to get things going again. Once we came out of the pandemic, we saw a surge in business, actually. Everybody, I think, was excited to go out and spend money and whatnot. And I think today you're starting to see a little bit of a setback again, where things are slowing down a little bit, people a little bit more cautious on how they're spending money. And you're seeing kind of flat sales over the last year.
Now, there are very famous viral videos now, because the one feature that Bartoli's has is the doggy window, the window for dog treats. That is something you're really playing up and using in your marketing. And the videos are, of course, very cute and very well produced and very well done and very attention getting. But does that also illustrate how you literally have to scratch and claw, no pun intended, to get people's attention for them to actually throw those budget concerns out the window and actually go out for pizza?
Yeah, I mean, that was never the original intention of the doggy window. It was more just we love our neighbors and their dogs, and we started putting treats outside the window, and all of a sudden my manager, we started posting a few videos and it kind of went viral. We had some dogs that had several million hits, and it was a fun thing. I mean, I guess if it gets them to bring their owners to the restaurant to buy pizza, it's a good thing. So it was a lot of fun.
And then pizza, it's timeless and memorable. It's something that really translates anywhere in the country. But have tastes changed to the point where it may make pizza a little less economical than it used to be, that there are just so many different menu varieties and that, you know, maybe people won't get a whole pizza with custom ingredients, but they want that slice? And how do you meet that? How do you meet that segment of the dining public, and how does that impact your materials costs?
Yeah, so we've always, at Bartoli's, at both my restaurants, we've always sold slices. And I think that's a trend you're starting to see more and more. It's for the individual person that doesn't want to spend a lot of money on a whole pizza and whatnot. We offer slices, and you're starting to see that at a lot of pizzerias throughout the city. Everybody's starting to jump on board and starting to sell slices. And I think that's it helps, you know, with the cost. Obviously, it's a lot less money. They don't have to sit and buy a whole piece. It's more of a convenience.
And then when it comes to just the cost of food writ large, I think everybody knows groceries and just food in general is a lot more expensive than it used to be. Do you consider yourself fortunate in the pizza business that you don't have nearly as much beef exposure as other places, because the price of beef is especially higher compared to other proteins?
Sure. While other restaurants are definitely impacted by the food costs, as we are as well, nothing's cheap anymore. Everything's went significantly up, and we've been unable to pass all those costs along to our customers, and we've kind of eaten a lot of it. We definitely have had price increases, and that's something we had to do. And unfortunately, we have to pass some of that along, and to be honest with you, we would have to actually raise the prices even more to cover what we've lost over the last number of years with all these increases.
Brian Tondrick, founder and owner of Bartoli's Pizzeria, locations in Chicago's Roscoe Village and Westtown neighborhoods. And we'll go in depth on the issues that the restaurant industry locally is facing, both from a policy standpoint and from an economic standpoint, coming up on our At Issue program this weekend. You could hear it 9:30 a.m. and p.m. on Sunday. So please join us on News Radio WBBM. Still to come, a look at the impact of the AI boom on the utility industry.
Compounding your interest with an economy of words. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The AI data center boom is fueling a surge in utility stocks, but power providers face uncertainty over how much of that massive demand is real. We welcome in Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager based at macrotides.com based in San Diego. Jim, thank you for joining us today. And the big policy discussion, and it's going to turn into a political issue soon, is the sticker shock that some people are experiencing when they open their utility bills. And then a lot of the response to that is, well, it's data centers are to blame for increased power demand and you paying more in your electrical bill every month. How much of that is real and how much of that is just trying to draw a connection between two unrelated things?
It's real, Rob. In 2022, the average cost per kilowatt hour of electricity was 14 cents. This year, it's 19 cents. That's an increase of 26%. And to, again, put it in perspective in terms of what's coming, in 2023, data centers consumed 4% of all the energy production in the U.S., and it's estimated that in 2028, it'll be close to 12%. So there's no question that the demand side is driving prices up, and we can expect it to continue.
And you're starting to see some major tech companies that are involved in the AI trade investing in their own power supplies. We're talking about Microsoft and other companies reactivating decommissioned nuclear power plants. If you're a utility, though, or an electricity supplier and you see this demand, when does it make sense for you to actually jump in and spend the billions to bring a power plant or a solar farm or something else online?
Well, I think the easy decision, Rob, is that you're going to increase capacity because you know there's going to be an increase in demand. What you don't know, obviously, is how much. I think we're in the stage of, field of dreams. If you build it, they will come. And I think that summarizes everybody involved with artificial intelligence in terms of the data centers, utility companies, and all the spending that's being done by the top five companies. In the last 5 years, the top five hyperscalers, the Metas and Microsoft and so forth, spent about $800 billion. This year, AI will generate about $20 billion of revenue. So there's this huge mismatch. So I think going out, whether it's 1 year, 3 years, somewhere along the line, everybody's ramping up scale. And then the question of, do they actually come? We're building it, but do they actually show up?
Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager, macrotides.com in San Diego. Thank you for joining us today.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everyone. I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air. And we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.